Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC, the show that takes all the Champions League action and delivers it to you in bite-sized portions. My name's Jack Collins and I'll be your host today, and joining me all the way across the Atlantic, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Very good, mate. The Premier League rules at the moment, mate, when it comes to the Champions League. We've got Aston Villa top of the Champions League, second place Liverpool, third place Manchester City. We're ruling it, mate. Do you know the funniest thing, actually? I was just looking at the table just to see where we're at after three games. Fourth is Monaco, fifth is Brest. So you've got two French teams there, and you've got PSG down in 19th. Oh, what a weird old league we're looking at the moment. But yeah, what a fun couple of days, mate. There's a couple of staggering results, a couple of crazy games, a few in between that are really hard to keep tabs on. But all in all, it's another good game week.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And we're going to work through all of the action today. Lots to get through. So I think we should just get stuck into it. And I think the only place to start with Wednesday's action was Barcelona 4, Bayern Munich 1. And my first takeaway from this game, Dean, is that Barcelona are definitely back in the conversation. Oh. They're not perfect, especially defensively, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But they are a cohesive side with a distinctive identity once again. This was the youngest Barcelona side to play in the Champions League in 13 years. We talked about La Masia being back on last week's Truth. They started here with two 17-year-olds and two 21-year-olds in this team. But also the veterans are out there providing leadership. And, you know, for the first time in a long time, it feels like Barcelona have got the balance right. Iñigo Martinez was an absolute colossus at the back when they were under the cosh at the end of the first half. Rafinha got the ball rolling. Again, I'll talk about him in a bit more detail later. Added a glorious third. And Lewandowski back doing what he does best. I think what was really interesting from a Barcelona perspective was that everything was kind of stacked against them in terms of recent history in this game. I think that Bayern were looking to become just the second team to win seven consecutive games in the Champions League against a single opponent. I think the only team that have ever done that was Real Madrid against Ajax from 2010 to 2018, I think. Mm-hmm. So this was pretty heavily stacked against Barcelona in that regard. And look, you can talk about the way that Barcelona have come through this and this element of kind of, if you can't beat Bayern, can you be Bayern, that they've seen, you know, kind of got going on with Lewandowski up front and Hansi Flick in the dugout. But actually, considering that Bayern, yes, are under a new coach in Vincent Kompany, but all the signs, I think, from, and all the sounds, maybe more importantly, from the Bayern hierarchy are so good in that regard. And they're like, no, it was not a gamble. We're really happy with what he's doing. The difference to even Thomas Tuchel is night and day. They've been really, really vehement in their praise of Vincent Kompany. But actually, you come to this kind of game and Barcelona have it all to do in terms of turning it around, and they deliver a performance of this caliber. It's the first one I think you look at, and you can look at Barcelona's league form and say it's all been very impressive. We know the Clásico's coming up at the weekend, and that's a kind of another story entirely. But this felt like a massive week for them in terms of everything about this season could have come crashing down. It didn't come crashing down after that loss to Monaco. They bounce back and then they deliver a statement win like this in the Champions League. I mean, this is what it's all about for Barcelona fans, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they just score so many goals at the moment. I mean, they've got four in this one. They got five against Sevilla at the weekend. Before that, they got three away to Alaves. Game before that, they got five against Young Boys. I mean, this team is absolutely flying at the moment. And, you know, good old Rafinha coming up with his treble here, and the confidence that's being built in these players. That's what's so impressive about it. Players that there were serious doubts over coming into this season are just kind of brushing it all off, whether it's because they were young or whether it's because they weren't deemed to be good enough. They're all just kind of like stepping up to that challenge.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, to flip it to Bayern for a minute, they got in behind on numerous occasions in the first half. They scored an offside goal from it. Kane maybe should have rounded the keeper on another occasion, and then they just didn't really do it again. It felt like a really weird strategy from Kompany. And I think that when you're looking at how Bayern set up to try and hurt Barcelona, we know that Barcelona play with a pretty high line, and we saw that Bayern were able to exploit it in a couple of times in the first half. Yes, Barcelona got better at dealing with it in the second half and didn't have to be quite so adventurous, especially once they scored the third goal. They were able to sit on it a bit more and those spaces closed down, and that's fine. But I just thought it was really strange that Bayern didn't try and push on that button whilst it was available to them, that they didn't try to just basically spam it, because there was clearly joy to be had getting in behind this Barcelona back line early on. And Íñigo Martínez did put in some excellent blocks and some really good last-ditch defending. But the flip side of that is you're kind of watching them and thinking, why aren't you pinging that ball over the top time and time and time again to try and catch Barcelona out? Because it's something that they've struggled to deal with in times gone by as well. So We saw that in the first game against Monaco, the fact that Eric Garcia got caught out. That was a poor back pass, but actually that pressure on the back line and the fact that when they are facing the wrong way, things can happen to this Barcelona side. Just felt like Bayern didn't really press the buttons to try and get in and at Barcelona in a way that it almost felt like they should have. And football's not always that simple, but sometimes if a strategy is working, you just time and time again until something breaks, whether that's a red card or it's a goal or it's, you know, defenders just having to break at each other because they're like, we can't keep doing this over and over and over again. And then kind of to flip it round, defensively, Kompany's a former centre-back, and it feels really strange that Bayern are still so brittle at the back. I have no idea what on earth Kim is doing for the second goal. It's never a foul, and there's people are going to complain about this. Fermin basically sort of leans into Kim as he's in the air and the ball goes over his head. The size of these two players. Kim's built like a fridge, and Fermin is a small little technical Spanish midfielder. Like, that is never a foul in a million years, and he does really well to lift it round Neuer, and Lewandowski scores. But for the third goal that Rafinha scores, where are all the defenders? They've all just disappeared. One crossfield ball, as good as it is from Marc Casado, like one crossfield ball should not take out your entire team, should not cut you open this easily. So Bayern still have work to do from a defensive standpoint. And actually, it felt like Kompany got a lot of this one wrong against, you know, a manager who clearly has more history and definitely has more of a kind of working relationship of how to manage big games in Hansi Flick. But it just felt like one of those ones where experience really told in the dugout in this one.
Yeah, I mean, Kim was just caught out. Like, I think he'd just come too far forwards, and he like kind of starts to backpedal a bit, and that's why I think he's already off balance, and just an arm in the back is kind of, yeah, he gets a nudge, but it's not a foul. And then, as you say, a switch of play completely kills them. And once you're 3-1 down against Barca, it's always going to be difficult to come back, even if you have got the prowess that Bayern have got. So it's a kind of a shattering scoreline, really. I mean, for Kompany to take a board, because Bayern aren't used to setbacks of this weight, really, at this stage of the competition. It's something that they're going to have to come back from. But defensively, yeah, they just got caught way too far apart.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, just as a kind of final point on this, you mentioned him earlier. I touched him in the first point. Let's not beat around the bush. Rafinha's in Ballon d'Or form. His second career hat-trick. Both have now come this season. This was cometh the hour, cometh the man. All the pre-match talk, as you'd expect, about Lewandowski against his former club, about Flick against his former club, about Lamine Yamal, who is the teen prodigy and the, you know, Lionel Messi heir in waiting, all of these things. But the man wearing the armband for Barcelona was the shining light once again. He's radiating confidence, swagger, vibes. He's just a man reborn. And it's ludicrous to think that, you know, less than 6 months ago, Barcelona wanted him to leave the club. When you see him playing like this, playing like a man possessed, what a battle we have coming up this weekend. And obviously, we'll discuss this more on our Friday show on Patreon, where we're doing weekend previews. But Barcelona versus Real Madrid in El Clasico, Rafinha versus Vinicius Jr., two Brazilians balling out for their respective clubs. And we talked about some transfers recently for Barcelona and for Real Madrid, where we were talking about El Clasico returning to the kind of pinnacle of the game. And I don't think it's there yet. And you mentioned at the top of the, you know, top of the show that it's still the Premier League sides that currently dominate this league table in the Champions League, whatever you want to make of that league table at this point. But this feels like a narrative I can 100% get behind. El Clasico is back, and so much of it is to do with these two brilliant Brazilians.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, Rafinha, I definitely didn't see this one coming. Didn't have any faith in him coming to a fixture like this and getting a hat-trick. That was just not on the cards at the start of this season. But, you know, he was 27 years old. He's obviously got... holds himself in very high esteem, which you have to when you're going into a club like this that seems like they're open to selling you as the season begins. And you've got to kind of just hype yourself up and prove that you've got the output that can help you survive. He's played 12 games this season. He's got 6 goals and 8 assists. Like, that is top form. And he's doing it on a pretty regular basis. You know, there's not many games where he's not scoring or assisting. So the fact he's gone from being almost pushed out of the club to now wearing the captain's armband for the last, what, 4 or 5 games, like, really, really impressive stuff.
Yeah, the armband really feels like it suits him.
It's really
right?
weird. And it's not come it's across quite as like a captain to me at all.
Yeah, wearing it, right? And then obviously Lewandowski's in there. We talked about Inigo Martinez. These are senior players. Martinez is 33 and Lewandowski even older than that. There have been players who have been at the club for far longer than Rafinha has been there. It's a bit of a strange one, but it suits him. And Hansi Flick seems like he's got this decision absolutely right. So another tick in the Flick box. But we will leave Catalonia there, and you're going to take us over to East Germany, where Liverpool won 1-0 against Leipzig.
They did, yeah. A good win for Liverpool. Didn't blow them away by any stretch of the imagination. And it wasn't a vintage performance, but it is another milestone, really, for Arne Slot. He has now won 11 of his first 12 games this season. And Liverpool have won 6 consecutive away matches, which is crazy going. They managed this game pretty well. I don't feel like it was perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But at this time of year, when you're trying to manage your squad, the international breaks, the other big games that you've got coming up, they've obviously got Arsenal at the weekend. It was a tricky one to know where the minutes were going to go for people and how you were going to make sure of the victory. There were some big plus points. Kelleher had a great game in goal, made a couple of cracking saves that kept them in it. Nunes gets the goal. I mean, I know it's a tap in from like 1 yard and it was probably going in anyway from Mo Salah, but
they all count, mate.
They all count. And for me, Darwin Nunes doesn't score enough goals like this. Like, he's, you know, he loves to rifle them in and he likes to score these great goals. And I think sometimes what's missing from Nunes is just the scruffy stuff. So, you know, Salah would have nudged it in if it was the other way around. Fair play to Nunes for making sure it did go in. You've got to be sure. Gravenberch, different gravy again. Like, he's just been incredible this season for them. And it's 3 wins out of 3 for Liverpool in the Champions League in a new era under a new manager. Should have had a penalty as well during the game. So I think overall they'll be very happy with the way they've come through it. Mo Salah not overly happy to have been substituted during it. But again, I think that's probably one eye on the weekend and what they've got coming up. Salah's never going to be happy when he's substituted unless he's like got 3 or 4 goals already in the bank. And scruffy wins are sometimes as important as the games where you've shown all the guile that you're capable of. You think of the 2 challenges that they faced recently. There was the Chelsea one at the weekend where they really had to work hard for it and they had to overcome a tactical battle to make sure that they come through. This one, yeah, a bit more lackluster, but still what I like about this Liverpool team is the way that they can control the tempo of a game. They'll go from 1 minute playing this slick, fast attacking stuff. And then when the moments when the game is perhaps not going their way, they'll just slow things down and they'll just be like, okay, stop the game. Let's just leave it for a minute. And they will just dictate the tempo of it. So even though it wasn't wholly convincing and could easily have ended up being 1-1 because it was such a slim scoreline, I think it's totally fine. Now, look, on a different day, if Sesko would have made the most of his chances, if Openda hadn't have had disallowed goals, it would have been a different scoreline. But I love the fact that Leipzig went into this game with Xavi Simons, Openda, Sesko, Nusa. Like, they showed real intent to actually go and have a go at this. I don't think they were brilliant, but what I did like about them was that they weren't afraid to have a go at Liverpool. And they had to try to test them, and they had opportunities. I mean, Sesko missed a header early on, which it was hard to get weight behind it, but I still feel like he could, should have done better. There was one that Kelleher comes running out of his goal. I don't know why he did it, but he needed to, felt he needed to get his head on it and just put it out of play. Doesn't manage to do that. Sesko collects the ball, and as Kelleher's retreating, Sesko tries to stick it in the far corner. His radar's off, it goes wide. Sesko had another chance in the second half. I know that this is probably a bit of a hot take, Jack. I prefer Openda to Sesko.
No, I don't think that's that hot a take.
I don't know. I've never actually spoken to anyone about this. But if, like, obviously Sesko is always talked about for a Premier League move, and I understand it, right? But I think actually Openda might do better in the Premier League. Yeah, they're different players, obviously, different styles. But I personally think that Openda would do better. That's my vantage point on it.
No, I quite like it. It's one of those sort of strange ones in that I think what a lot of teams like about Sesko is that he has that all-round game, right?
Yeah.
The ability to hold up play a little bit more, the ability to stretch and get in behind. He's a little bit of a kind of Haaland clone, but not quite as good.
No, yeah, yeah.
We'll talk about him in a bit. And I can understand why, therefore, that profile of player appeals to a lot of clubs in the Premier League. But I think that Openda is the more refined striker at this point. I think that he's the one that you would trust in that last moment. And look, neither of them are completely clinical. And that's the reason that they haven't maybe been talked about in the same place. And Openda is obviously a couple of years on from Sesko. Not loads, but a couple. And so you look at where they are, I can see why people are stretching towards Sesko. But I'm with you in that if I was picking one of those strikers to start for my team right now up front, I would go with Openda. I think he has a little bit more just clinicality, a little bit more of a refined nature about the way that he plays. But I think people quite like the rawness that Sesko is exhibiting at this point in his career.
Yeah, and obviously, like, Sesko is obviously an absolute giant, but he's only 21. And sometimes, you know, we can forget, like, how much growth there is still to be done. Maybe not physically, even though he might still grow another inch, I guess. But in terms of his actual growth as a footballer, in terms of his mindset, in terms of the lessons that he's learning right now, there is still a lot there. But, you know, recently it's fair to say that he hasn't been quite as clinical as you might hope he would be. He hasn't scored in his last couple of games in the Bundesliga and didn't take his chances here, which was somewhat surprising. And for Leipzig is really disappointing, to be honest. I mean, they've got 0 points from 3 games now. Which
yeah,
is really harsh.
Tough start.
It's really harsh because they've played Atletico Madrid, Juventus, and Liverpool. That is tough.
They should have won that Juventus game. And look, I gave Juve plenty of praise for their heart and spirit in that game, and it was correct because actually the way that they came out and actually showed that was impressive. But Leipzig would have been absolutely kicking themselves at 2-1 up and a man up to lose that game 3-2 is just ludicrous in so many different ways. So
yeah,
still a lot of work to be done, I think, for Marco Rose's side. But part of me does think that Leipzig are very much focused on breaking this Bundesliga duck and actually ending that kind of narrative that keeps going that they're sort of nearly there, but not completely there. And look, you look at their Bundesliga form, they're level top with Bayern at the moment. I think they're behind them on goal difference. It does feel like they're not putting their eggs in that basket and saying, okay, we're going to throw the Champions League. These have been three very difficult games against top-class opposition. But I do think that they will get better as this competition goes on.
I'd be very surprised
if Leipzig don't get to the playoffs at least.
I don't think they'll get there. I don't. I was just looking at it. Like, I don't think they'll get there. They're 31st in the Champions League right now. They've got 0 wins out of 3. Then their next game is Celtic. Celtic tonight have pulled off a really good result. It's Celtic away. That's not a straightforward win. They probably will win, but not necessarily. And then the next two games are Inter Milan and Aston Villa. They're really difficult games. They might lose five out of six.
Draw Leipzig, right? Like you come to this and you're thinking about it, and we talked about the draws that we talked about with Benfica. We were particularly kind of like, oh, that's a dreadful draw for Benfica. PSG got a pretty rough deal as well in their draw. Leipzig weren't one we necessarily talked about, but that is a brutal
opening.
Brutal. Six.
They've got one easy game. And it's not even that. I mean, yeah, okay, Celtic.
It's a paradise.
Yeah,
right?
But it's away. So it's like their easy game is away at a really what can be a tough game. So I don't think they're going to go through, mate. I don't think they will. And I think that was a bit of a missed opportunity, quite literally, because they did have the chances to make the most of this. Again, though, I've got to say, like, it is that thing. I keep talking about this. Like, Van Dijk tries to keep the Liverpool defence quite high, and he does well with it most of the time. But obviously, sometimes they are dragged back a bit. And that is when teams, again and again, are aiming for that spot in between goalkeeper and defence. And there is joy there. Like, Sesko missed one from there today. Appender almost got one in there today. That is, if you want to find a weakness, the weakness. But at the end of the day, Liverpool come away with another clean sheet. And it's really
That's
important.
That's what I was just
one.
About to say. Yeah. Yeah, the weakness is there, but no one seems
no
to
one's
be
scoring
it.
From it. Yeah, exactly.
At that point, is it a weakness? Yeah. I don't know. Let's come on to City, who won 5-0 against Sparta Prague. It was relatively routine for City at the end of things, but I do find it interesting. A couple of things. We must talk about Erling Haaland, who scores an absolutely ridiculous goal here. It's a finish reminiscent of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. His foot is so high, Dean, when he gets this ball. He bounces it into the ground and past the keeper, and it ends up being City's second goal. Oh, it's outrageous, mate. It's one of just the best finishes you've ever seen. All he needs to do is get something on it, obviously. But to get your foot to this ball is nigh on impossible. It's just one of those goals that nobody else scores. Zlatan, maybe, and Haaland at this point. And it takes him, Dean, up to... He's 16th now in the Champions League all-time top scoring charts. So today, well, we obviously saw him pass Sergio Aguero last time out and Alessandro Del Piero, he went level with. Today, he equaled and then surpassed Neymar, who's on 43 Champions League goals in 81 games, which is a pretty good hit rate. That's more than one in two, right?
Yeah.
And then he went level with Didier Drogba on 44 Champions League goals. Now, it took Didier Drogba 92 Champions League games to score 44 goals, which again is a pretty impressive hit rate, 0.48 goals a game in Europe's elite club competition. It's taken Haaland 42 games, 50 games less than Didier Drogba in a Chelsea side that were pretty dominant, right? And were getting to the sharp end of the competition on a regular basis at that point. Erling Haaland is one behind Mohamed Salah, who's scored 45 goals in 82 games at 0.55. And I think maybe the most interesting thing is that Haaland is now 5 goals behind Kylian Mbappe, having played in 34 fewer Champions League games. He started 3 years after Kylian Mbappe. Hot take, Erling Haaland overtakes Kylian Mbappe's scoring record in the Champions League this season.
Yeah, wow. I mean, obviously different players because... Haaland's just a goal hanger, but but yeah, it's a good thing. Look, I've just seen the goal for the first time, and it's like a back heel kung fu kick or something. I don't even know how he's even.
It's very Zlatan.
Get
isn't
up
it?
There, yeah, it's very Zlatan. But I've got to say, at the same time, what play from Savio to get that cross in? Like that is unbelievable. Yeah. The way he throws his fullback off to go one way and then the other and get that cross in from Savio, that is different class, to be fair. So yeah, the finish is going to definitely get all the headlines. And I'll be honest, I'm pleased to see Haaland back in the goals. But that is lovely setup from Savio.
Yeah, I mean, look, this was relatively easy for City by the end. But I suppose the question is not necessarily about the performance here, because you can take away what you like from that. But two questions, I think, from my perspective, and two takeaways that we can kind of discuss in a little bit more depth. The first is that I think City needed a game like this where they could get their attacking weaponry back operational after stumbling. Like, they've won their last four now, but they stumbled a little bit through the last couple of games. Fulham gave them problems. We saw Wolves give them problems as well. they haven't been this free-flowing attacking side that actually we've come to expect a little bit from City. It's been a little bit stodgy. And with the Rodri injury as well, obviously part of that is to do with the midfield, but it's been a lot of goals from defenders. And actually, they've been conceding a fair few, and they've been needing players to dig them out late in games. And a lot of the time, that's been from set pieces. It's been John Stones in the last couple of games. He scored again tonight. Man's on fire in front of goal. But this one where the attacking players got themselves back into the goals and back into some sort of form. And Haaland's second goal is gorgeous from a lot of players, but a lovely first-time pass from Phil Foden to get the move underway. Haaland kind of shifts it out of his feet beautifully and finishes it with aplomb. He'll be frustrated that he didn't stay on the pitch long enough to score the penalty and pick up his hat trick. But it did feel like City needed a game like this just to be kind of like, okay, we can just oil the wheel a little bit and we can get going.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really important for a lot of these players to recapture, I don't want to say confidence because they're Manchester City. Of course, they're already feeling confident, but they've got an unbelievable opportunity at the moment to, dare I say it, start running away with the league. I think that when you look at the situation that Arsenal are in, they are starting to, they won't be losing belief, but they're obviously losing a little bit of momentum and grip on their own situation. Liverpool potentially rise to give City a title challenge. But at the moment, as we're looking at it in domestically, Man City will be like, right, Arsenal were our main rivals. Arsenal are in a bit of an injury problem. You'll almost want Liverpool to go and beat Arsenal at the weekend from a Man City perspective. So then there's this gap that builds. Man City have got Southampton at the weekend. Like, they're going to batter them. Like, they've won 5-0 tonight. They'll win 5-0 again at the weekend, I'm sure. And then, again, you start to build belief. You go to Bournemouth the week after, which might be easy, but it's a nice fixture. You go Brighton the week after. And these are the sort of games where you're like, okay, at a time when Arsenal are struggling for players with injuries, and they've also got Liverpool and then Newcastle and then Chelsea, and Arsenal got to come through this busy period and dig deep, City just need to remember how simple it can be for them to score goals. Obviously, part of it too is like, the main issue for City still is coming to grips with the Rodri situation, and Kovacic and Gundogan isn't ideal. I don't think anyone's completely convinced by it. We were talking the other day on this main pod about Mateusz Nunes potentially being available for transfer, but that this week would be really key for him. I was told that he would start this game. I'm told that if it went well, he would have an opportunity too in that Southampton game. And potentially that gives him a platform to actually start his Manchester City career properly. He's obviously played this game. I didn't see it in its entirety, but when you come away from it on face value, he's got a goal, he's got an assist, he's got a start. And that's just a good moment for him to actually, again, start believing in himself. And maybe you can start to find some footing there for him to get going.
Yeah, I think Mateus's performance today was impressive. And look, he actually sets up the Haaland goal. It's his pass across that opens the space up after Foden flicks the ball through. It's a really, really good assist. He takes the penalty really, really well as well. So he's obviously scrapping now for his space in this team. And I think it's worked out really nicely for him. And as you say, a good run of fixtures as well. Maybe this is the moment that he actually does start to look like a Manchester City player, because I thought that he did tonight, albeit against opposition that they would be expecting to beat quite comfortably at home. So let's see how that one turns out. But a really good night for Mateusz. Right, let's run through all of the rest of the games. Now, this has taken me some time, but we're going to do it, right? So Brest 1, Leverkusen 1. Both these two staying unbeaten after what was a really good game, I thought, between two sides well matched on the pitch. Brest's fairy tale start in the Champions League shows no signs of abating, really. Leverkusen's defensive frailties from the start of the campaign do appear to be slowly drifting into the rearview mirror. This was much better, I thought, in that regard. No Boniface up front for Leverkusen. He obviously had that car accident following the Eintracht Frankfurt game at the weekend. Maybe he would have proved the difference here. Thought Patrick Schick really kind of failed to impose himself on the game. But ultimately, I think both sides will be pretty happy with their starts to the Champions League season. 7 points each, they're fifth and sixth respectively.
shouts out to Brest, because they play with so much heart and no little talent. They've really turned quite a lot of heads with their performances in the competition so far. And I think this is another one that they'll rack up and people will start to be taking notice. So an important point for them, and especially after they fell behind in this one, Florian Wirtz scored the opener. It's a brilliant, brilliant equaliser from Brest. And Pierre Lismalou said after the game, he was like, I think a lot of people would have assumed we were going to get battered here. And we've stood up and been counted once again. And look, they're proving that they, you know, have a space in this competition, and they've put together some good results. So, yeah, shouts out to them. Mm-hmm. Atalanta nil, Celtic nil was the other early game.
Yeah, I saw
now,
some of that one.
I was looking at Gazzetta dello Sport this morning, and they described Celtic as dangerous as domestic cats. Now, considering their lack of attacking output in this one, Celtic, Gazzetta might be quite happy with that description, but defensively, from a Celtic perspective, this was absolutely huge. Mateo Retegui has been on fire, filthy form of late, 6 goals and 2 assists in his last 4 games for club and country before this one. But Austin Trusty, who's been a little bit shaky in a Celtic shirt since that move in the summer, and Liam Scales came up huge in a rearguard action that I would describe as more Lisbon Lion than Scottish Fold. So this was a performance that Celtic needed, one that proves that they can stand up to big tests when it comes to these European nights away from home. Atalanta will rue missed chances, but I thought much to take away from a Celtic performance that put some of the defensive demons from Dortmund to rest. Benfica 1, Feyenoord 3. Feyenoord put on a show in Lisbon. Benfica hadn't lost for a calendar year at the Estadio de Luz, even when things, by their own standards, they weren't going particularly well last season. And obviously, Roger Schmidt lost his job at the start of this one. But ultimately, this game was about Feyenoord in so many ways. They've been questioned coming into this season, even if Arne Slot's departure for Anfield was kind of understandably going to slow down some of the progress that we've seen over the last couple of years. Anthony Malambo's breakout season shows no signs of slowing down. He's their top scorer from midfield. Benfica absolutely couldn't handle him. Igor Paixão, 2 brilliant assists from him. Another Brazilian shining on the European stage. And I thought that defensively, David Hanko and Trauner handled much of what Benfica could throw at them. Really, really good performance from Feyenoord. And whilst Benfica will look at a couple of missed chances at 2-1, I think ultimately most Benfica fans will accept that the better side won here. And that's a pretty big statement win, I think, from Feyenoord away from home. Atleti lost at home as well, 3-1 to Lille. Now, there's about 100 or so Lille fans in the Wanda Metropolitano. They must just be walking around Madrid singing, "Can we play you every week?"
Yeah, to everyone.
To everyone. Of the Madrid divide. Yeah, Real Madrid in France dispatched last time out. Atleti here on their own patch. This was a really weird game. And Bruno Genesio might have been absolutely slammed if this had gone wrong, because Atleti was so dominant in the first half. And Genesio made a lot of changes to this Lille side. He basically rotated really, really heavily, more than I think anyone would have expected. We saw like Jonathan David start on the bench, saw a couple of big names missing from this side. Angel Gomes came off the bench, Bafodé Diakite came off the bench, Adon Jagrova came off the bench and ultimately scored the equaliser, even if it took a massive deflection. But the question, I think, is to Atleti, one, why weren't they able to take advantage of the dominance that they had in the first half? Now, it's a great goal, the first one from Julian Alvarez, but then every single chance after that felt like it fell to Alexander Sorloth. And while Sorloth felt like a good signing for Atleti, a little bit different up top and someone who came very close and I think probably would have won the Pichichi, the Golden Boot last year in Spain, if he hadn't been injured for the final game of the season, it just hasn't quite clicked for him at Atleti yet. Griezmann was excellent as per, but Alvarez felt like the one who was going to take those chances. And then from a position of real strength, you know, Atleti should have been 2-3-0 up at the break. I don't think there's any sort of questions about that. But still, from a 1-0 up at home perspective, you expect the Simeone side to see that out. And then I think there have to be questions asked at this point about the fact that Atleti just don't seem to be able to hold on to leads. Like, and, you know, Jagrova comes on. You all know how good Jagrova is at shooting from distance. I mean, this was his 7th goal this season. Yes, it takes a massive deflection. But, like, you stop him shooting. You stop that at source. And then Jonathan David comes off the bench and bags a brace, and Lille end up winning this 3-1. Genesio making those changes and being able to bring on that kind of power off the bench has worked a treat for him here. But the only reason he was able to do that is because Atleti couldn't finish their dinner in the first half, especially Sorloth. So strange one in that Genesio would have been slammed if this was 3-0 at halftime. He was like, what on earth are you doing? Resting all of your big players for after you just beaten Real Madrid. But yeah, it's absolutely come off. And you know what? He's going to take the plaudits as he would have taken that criticism.
Yeah, it's a massive result that. I mean, definitely the most surprising one. Obviously, watched two games mainly, but and I hadn't seen that one until just about we were about to record. And I was said to you, I was like, what? What a result? How did that happen? I'll watch it again in a minute.
I mean, what happened was Atleti couldn't finish themselves off. And then suddenly Lille were absolutely brilliant once those changes were made and they were able to flip it. I mean, look, substitutes were the difference as well for Inter, who beat Young Boys 1-0 at the Vankdorf. Look, Inter rotated heavily, heavily again. And we saw Arnautovic and Mediterranean start up top. To be honest, Arnautovic misses a penalty and it looks like the rotations are going to kill Inter because they were second best to Young Boys, who've been pretty dreadful in the competition, let's be honest, for a lot of this game. But the big, big guns came on and turned up. On came Lautaro, on came Fede DiMarco, on came Marcus Thuram. So what happens? In the 91st minute, Lautaro breaks. He lays it wide for DiMarco with a glorious back heel. He crosses for Thuram to score the winner. Big players deliver on big stages and Inter get out of jail by throwing their aces on the table. I suppose the only question marks that remain are whether the depth of this Inter side, and you know, I spoke about this in pretty glowing terms over the summer. I thought they'd done really, really well in terms of their recruitment, but does that give them enough quality to allow them to compete across the multiple fronts that they're trying to do this season, especially with the kind of rise of this Napoli title challenge with them not playing European football in Serie A? It's clear what Inzaghi is trying to do, but ultimately they get another win and they are ticking along. But for long swathes of this, they were the second best side on the pitch. Wow. To Young Boys, that's not ideal, but hey, look, when you have this kind of ability to get yourselves out of jail, he's pulled it out of there again, Inzaghi. So major respect, I suppose. He takes the plaudits as he would have taken the criticism. So there it is. Final game of the night, RB Salzburg lost 2-0 to Dinamo Zagreb. Salzburg are in all sorts of trouble, Dean. All sorts of trouble. They are brutal. They've been brutal in the Champions League. And to be very frank, they've been pretty brutal in the Austrian Bundesliga as well. They got slapped around 5-0 by Sturm Graz just before the international break. Pep Leinders is having a very tough time of it. The red card. Now, if you haven't seen this, go and watch it. It sums this up in so many ways. They're completely undone by a simple long ball over the top. Four defenders unable to deal with one forward. The goalkeeper completely takes him out. And if the ref didn't think that was a red card, it was. Let's just be clear. He was then helped out because Alexander Schlager, the goalkeeper, picked himself up and decided to save a shot from outside the box. Just that was what he decided to do. It was shambolic. They're sliced apart for the second as well. Yes, they have 10 men at that point, but completely run through in midfield. They're on the edge of the opposition box with the ball. They get dispossessed and Dinamo Zagreb just absolutely storm through the middle and end up scoring with a well-worked second, but they can't get players back, can't get numbers back. It's just an absolute mess. This was at home against one of the weaker sides that they've been drawn. If they can't win this, you can't really see them winning anything, winning any games in the Champions League. So bizarre in loads and loads of ways. Zagreb are a really good side. They've got a lot of very young Croatian talent coming through. We've talked about Baturina and Sucic before, but it does feel like a side that are going to cause headaches to teams. And look, they're quietly going about their business. Interestingly, obviously they lost 9-2 to Bayern Munich on the opening day. They're now above Bayern in the Champions League table in after three match days. I don't think anybody saw that coming. So shouts out to Zagreb. They've really recovered well from that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good roundup, mate. You did well to watch all of that in the last 2 hours.
I've been doing my best, flying around the goals show across like two different things. I've had about seven screens going here in Portugal.
You're not even at
home. I think Lucy's nan thinks I'm insane, but here we are. We're doing our business as best we can. And that's that. So after the break, we're going to talk about Tuesday's action. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC, and it's time to take a look at Tuesday. Dean, there's only one place to start, I think, and it was Real Madrid's 5-2 win against Borussia Dortmund. Now, I watched this in Spain yesterday night. I've travelled between two countries today, so it's all been very exciting. But I got to watch this in a square in Vigo, and there was a lot of Real Madrid fans knocking around. There was a lot of other people supporting Borussia Dortmund who clearly support anybody else apart from Real Madrid. So that was interesting as well. But this was just an incredible game in some ways, because from my perspective, I've never seen a game that sums up two teams in terms of just what they ultimately are in their core, their complete identity is, as this 5-2 win for Real Madrid.
Yeah, I mean, it was completely absorbing, like everything about it, from the moment the scoring started to the moment it ended. It was just like, you couldn't take your eyes off it. It was a brilliant game. If you had a neutral friend that you wanted to get into football, like, just put this in front of them and give them a lesson in what can happen in front of our eyes. It was a game of two halves, like, stupid as it may sound, but it was like just so one-sided in one half and then completely turned. It just reiterates what we've been saying every single week ever since we began this podcast about Real Madrid and the Champions League mentality. They are unbeatable unless they play Lille, I guess. Then we'll just leave it at that for now. Look,
well, Lille just kill giants, is what they do.
Yeah. This stadium just knows what's going to happen sometimes. And that's what happened in the second half. And you could just feel it coming through the TV. But before we look at the Madrid side of things, let's just look at Dortmund and how they managed to lose this game, because they were 2-0 up. Marlon and Gittens had both scored. And you're suddenly in a funny situation, right? It's 35 minutes gone. You're 2-0 up at the Bernabeu. Everyone's completely stunned. And it's obviously great. You're winning 2-0, but there's like an hour of the game left. And that's quite scary. And unfortunately,
the last team on earth you want to be 2-0 up against.
It kind of
35
is.
35 minutes.
And Nuri Sahin, who hasn't exactly been completely safe in his role, found himself in a bizarre situation where he was on one hand on the verge of completing one of the best results in their history, if they could pull it off, but instead retreated, made some very weird decisions that turned out to be very wrong decisions, and probably now will end up losing his job anyway. So what he does is he takes off Jamie Gittens early on in the second half, brings on another centre-back, basically turns it into a back five. He's trying to close the game up a bit. He's trying to close some certain spaces. But what he's done by taking Gittens off is he's taken out the outlet that Dortmund had. Because a lot of the time when you play Real Madrid, particularly away from home, you do have to absorb pressure, and then you need someone to just let you have the pressure off for a few minutes. And Gittens was in the sort of form that would allow for that to happen. So not only did they not have that outlet, but he then makes the worst mistake anybody could ever make in a football match by bringing on Melon of the Year, Emre Can, with 15 minutes left. This was a terrible decision. He takes Ryerson off. Emre Can comes on. And basically his job is to keep out Vinicius Jr. I mean, he ain't going to do that. He is not going to do that. And as it comes down to it, I'm sorry, but Emre Can makes two big mistakes in the time that he's left on the pitch, and Real Madrid go on and win the game. Emre Can came on at 2-2. 20 minutes later, it's 5-2. Emre Can, the first one that he gives away, he could not be further from his own goal. He's by the corner flag, like attacking, loses the ball, then he's suddenly like chasing Vinicius Jr., gives up on that about halfway through it. Vinny cuts inside, swerves one into the far corner, brilliant finish. But then a similar thing happens again, down the same flank. Madrid quickly get the ball and switch it out, and he's just kind of in no man's land and can't get back quick enough to make up the space. So sorry to go on our old Melon again, but when I first did that segment, however many years ago, about Emre Can, I thought he was getting close to winding down, and he's still playing on Champions League nights at the Bernabeu. It's not all been bad for him in that time frame, but yeah, still not convinced by him. Look, as I say, Zahin was under pressure already coming into this game. I feel a bit sorry for him because it is a really difficult dilemma that you're left in, if you can call a 2-0 lead a dilemma. But at 2-2, he's obviously like, okay, I really, really want to try and close this game out. Emre Can has obviously got experiences and stuff that you'd like to believe could help that come through, but it didn't work out. I mean, the word out of Dortmund is that they're going to stick with the manager for now. They still believe in him, but a big turnaround is going to be needed. On Madrid, look, they weren't particularly good for long spells of this game. They haven't been good for long spells of this season, really, when you analyse all of their matches. But the underlying trait is that this team, particularly in the Champions League, will never give up. It is truly incredible. But from the moment that Rudiger scored on the hour mark to make it 2-1, they were always going to win this game. Like, the roar, the feel of the Bernabeu was just too much to bear. Vinicius Jr. turns it into 2-2 a couple of minutes later. Even when you get into the last 10 minutes, you're like, where's the goal coming from? Lucas Vazquez pulls it out the bag. He manages to get the goal, comes up with a nice celebration. And then, as I say, Vinny kills it off in the last five minutes or so. So what it does do, mate, is it tees up, like you said, a brilliant Clasico that we'll talk about more on Friday on Patreon. Please do come over there and have a listen to that. If you're not a member, then come over and see what you think of it all, because I think that this weekend we'll really have to dive into that game, what we're going to be getting from it, because it could honestly be one of the best Clasicos of modern times.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can't find the tweet for the life of me, but I saw someone tweet yesterday that basically, like, Dortmund appointed Edin Terzic, and what we kind of found from Edin Terzic was that he was slightly not quite, you know, didn't have quite enough nous to get Dortmund over those lines, right? And we saw that in terms of not only the Champions League, but the Bundesliga as well, when they had that opportunity and ultimately it didn't go their way a couple of years back. And you kind of replace him with a person who's got even less coaching experience and was on Terzic's team. Yeah. And kind of expected to change. And that, I suppose, is a little bit definition of madness, right? And I like Nuri Sahin, and I hope that he goes on to have a wonderful coaching career. But this was naivety and inexperience at its absolute height. And you're never getting out of the Bernabeu with that kind of attitude. It's just not going to work for you. So he got the first half really right. And then he absolutely panicked. And ultimately, that's led to this result. But equally, I can't put it all on him, because at 2-0 up, you're thinking Champions League. Real Madrid are probably going to win this. And you're also looking at the opposition going, Borussia Dortmund are perennially flaky. Yeah. Like, it couldn't have been set up better for exactly what happened. Like, one of those, it was written, right? It was written from the moment it came on. And so it proved.
Yeah, absolutely was, mate.
Right, let's flip onwards. I want to talk quickly about Aston Villa, who won 2-0 against Bologna and who are top of the Champions League table. Right, three quick takeaways. One, Villa can rotate. They have depth. Bologna are not the force that they were last year, but they're still a decent side with a lot of talent. Unai Emery rotated the pack and still comfortably won this game. Villa made four changes from the weekend's win over Fulham. We're in complete control from pretty much the whistle first going at Villa Park. There were questions about Villa's depth in both this competition and the Premier League, but so far, so good from a Villa perspective. McGinn and Duran, the two goal scorers, were players who were brought into the starting lineup. Martsen came in for Luca Digne, was imperious down that left-hand side. Duran proving he's more than capable of being just an impact sub at this level. This would have left Emery a very, very happy man. On Bologna, number two, they have a lot of really nice pieces in place, but they still feel a fair way off in terms of putting it together. It's not a massive slant on them, because anybody would struggle in losing your best centre-back, your centre-forward and your manager in the same summer, to say nothing of Lewis Ferguson, who's obviously remained sidelined with injury and was massive in the midfield for the club last year. That's a lot of the spine that's been taken out there. Italiano is a good manager, but he's been too cautious in the past, and I think that probably remains the case here. With no drop down to the Europa League, Bologna feel like one of the clubs that will suffer with this new format and not getting that extended run in European competition. And look, just to finish with Villa, this was not the explosive joy of the Bayern win, but in some ways it was just as memorable, in that it was a consummately professional performance, a full team display that shows they're not just capable of the sublime, but the serious as well. It was a game, I think, that showed the Villa are not just ready to compete at this level, but that they belong here. No questions really asked. When Villa beat Bayern, it must have felt like a fever dream for those fans who saw relegation and championship heartbreak a few years ago. But this is not, right? This is grounded reality. And Villa are a genuine force in this competition.
A genuine force. Well, they're top of it. They're top of the league. They just got to stay there and win it.
I mean, if they just win all their games in the league stage, do they get a trophy like Supporters Shield? I don't know. Like, how does this work? But
they should do. That'd be only fair.
They're real. Villa are the real deal. I refuse to accept any other the answers here. And yes, Bologna weren't great here, and they haven't been particularly great all season. They haven't lost many games. They haven't won many either. I think they've won one, lost one, and drawn six in Serie A. So they're clearly not where they were. But equally, I think that shows that they've not been easy to blow away by any stretch of the imagination. And Villa made this look relatively routine, right? That's as good as you can ask for from a Villa perspective. And this is what I'm trying to get at, I think, with this third point. The Bayern game, just the whole raw emotion of the entire ground and, you know, that first game back at Villa Park and it being so long since they were in this competition, suddenly you're like, oh my God, Villa have just beaten Bayern. And it's an incredible goal and all these things. But that almost feels like fantasy, right? This didn't. And I think that's maybe more important. It feels like, okay, we took a Champions League side in Bologna. Yes, okay, also new to the competition, fine. But just dismantled them pretty comfortably at home with whilst being able to rotate four pieces out that won a game pretty comfortably against a decent Fulham side in the Premier League at the weekend. That's just, you know, routine stuff. And that's how you end up going far in competitions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'll be interesting in the second half of the season how they continue to do it. But at the moment, you've just got to give them so much credit and so much credit to Emery. I saw as he was like leaving the pitch at the end, like a couple of the fans, he's going past them, just like literally worshipping him and waving their arms up and down in front of his face. Like they absolutely adore this man. And you just, they're in that awkward situation where you're just like loving every minute of it, but dreading the moment it might end, dreading anyone else losing a manager and wanting your manager. Hopefully that doesn't happen for them. And hopefully Emery realizes that he can just enjoy something for a while. He doesn't have to push himself to prove anything anywhere else. He can do it all right
well,
where he is.
He's pushing himself. He's top of the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, push himself into like a bigger club. There are a bigger club if you're top of the Champions League. But you know what I mean.
I mean, well, Villa are a massive club. But that's it. I take your point. But I don't think Emery's going to be going anywhere. I think he realizes quite how good and what a lovely match actually this is for him, and actually maybe that Villa have the capability to go on and do some pretty incredible things.
Yeah, we'll see what they're capable of, mate.
We will indeed. Right, should we go to one of Unai Emery's former clubs? Arsenal won 1-0 against Shakhtar Donetsk. What do you make of it?
It wasn't one of their better performances of the season. Arsenal obviously got the result that they needed. The one goal scoreline was pretty dangerous. They could have lost the points right at the end. Raya makes a good save. He saved him a few times this season, but it is his job, so that's good. It felt like Arsenal didn't take any risks, to be honest, and I guess I don't blame them for that. They're already up against it at the moment. They already have players missing through injury. They already have players getting sent off every couple of weeks. They kind of just wanted a no-frills win. That's what it felt
like.
Like
getting hooked really early on did make me laugh because he was on a card. We're like, we can't be having that.
It's like they've now got this fear about them. Like, I just want to end this game with 11 men, 1-0 to the Arsenal. Absolutely fine. This is all acceptable. My dad actually went to this game with my nephew because my nephew is an Arsenal fan. So my dad took him and I texted him after and I was asking what it was like. And he was like, oh, it wasn't very good. He said, I really expected to see more energy in that game. And it just felt like they kind of went through the motions. And I was like, I guess that's not really a total surprise. I mean, I had half an eye on it while I was working here, but I didn't watch it closely in lifetime and then watched it all back. But
they needed a routine win after the weekend, right? That's what they needed. Didn't get it. And maybe actually there was a little bit too much trepidation in this for it to have been comfortable, but Arsenal just needed to get back to winning ways, and ultimately they have done that.
Yeah. I said to Dad, you know, were they ever under threat? Obviously, I've seen the chance at the end and stuff. He's like, honestly, you'd have been better off than their striker. He barely moved. He said Seacan was just like, he said, I don't rate him at all. I said, oh, fair enough, Dad. That's good. It must be quite good. He plays for Shakhtar Donetsk in the Champions League. I think he might be better than me. But yeah, I think you can defend Arsenal a little bit here for having a night where they're happy to just go through the motions. But I tell you what, mate, we are seeing a time now that obviously Arsenal without Odegaard, without Saka, it's abundantly clear that the result of that is that they lack the same creative and attacking intent.
I suppose that's not a surprise.
It's not a surprise, but it's extremely concerning if they're not around for any more games together, because they're so important. I think that Arsenal fans are desperate to see more of Wanneri now. I think that that's going to become a bit more of a pressure point for Arteta. I think he'll probably put a deaf ear to it. I don't think he's interested in what people think about that. He's managing his time. Lewis Skelly ended up coming into this game, so maybe he didn't want two players of that age having to go through it all at the same time. But all in all, like, Arsenal just needed the points on the board here because they've got an extremely important fixture at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, as regular listeners will know, obviously Charlie Patino not really getting a look in at Deportivo La Coruña at the moment, so maybe they'll bring him back. Maybe a move to bring Patino back is what Arsenal need to spark that creativity. Yeah, I think this was fine from an Arsenal side. I've seen a bit of overreaction kind of across the board on this one, but I think they ultimately just did what they needed to do. And whilst it probably should have been a little bit more comfortable, and Arteta spoke about missing some big chances, ultimately Arsenal were relatively happy with the fact that they just got back to winning ways and got the job done, and that's all you can really ask for. Mm-hmm. So yeah, right, let's rattle through the rest of them. Buckling AC Milan 3 Club Brugge 1. I mean, what can Christian Pulisic not do at this point? Banged in an Olympic goal here to get Milan underway, but there are still some worrying signs around him for Milan, even though that they won at 1-0 up and a man up. They should have really cruised home, but they shot themselves in the foot. I mean, from a positive aspect, the way that Tijani Reinders pops up in almost the same spot for both the goals, I think, suggests that they are finding some patterns in play that work and that they can repeat, which has to be a good thing. But Mike Maignan had another really, really impressive performance here. Whilst that's a good thing in itself, and that I think Maignan's getting back to his best, you kind of have to question a little bit if they should need him to be this imperious against a side clearly weaker than them at home with an extra man. I thought that Chukwueze looked pretty bright when he came on, and if they can get that Liao, Pulisic, Chukwueze trident working behind the striker, they'll be incredibly hard to stop. But unconvincing, I would say, about Milan in this one. Again, though, job done, and they needed to do that and needed to get kind of off the mark in this Champions League campaign. They'll be relatively happy, I think, and Fonseca will look at that as a night's work well done, even if it was a little bit harder than perhaps it needed to be. Staying in Italy, Juve 0, Stuttgart 1. Look, you look at this result maybe, and you'll look at when the goal came, and you'll think, oh, Stuttgart scored in, you know, added time after 90th minute. That late goal might make this look like a smash and grab, but do not be fooled. The better team won here, and it's a testament to a man of the match performance from Juve's backup goalkeeper, Mattia Perin, that this wasn't done and dusted much, much earlier. He was eventually beaten, but to be honest, no slight. Considering he dropped a masterclass behind a faltering Juve back line, he concluded saving a penalty. He must have thought at that moment, he turned around and celebrated in front of the fans, giving it the big un, that he's earned his side a point that they didn't really deserve. Juve are injury ridden, and that should be considered to be a huge factor. But equally, I felt like Motta got this drastically wrong. And perhaps that's the first time you can say that about him for any of the games this season. Juve deserved to lose this game. Impressive from Stuttgart. They took a hammering at the hands of Bayern at the weekend, but they look like they're going to cause teams major headaches in this competition. Yeah. We said that after their game against Real Madrid, which they ended up losing, but this was the correct result. They were the better team here. And look, they're not here to make up numbers. Sebastian Hoeneß's coaching credentials taking major kudos boosts by the week.
The way he took the winner was just brilliant. Like, they totally deserved that moment. And even though everybody thinks I'm a closet Juventus fan, I'm not. And
you just work for them.
Yeah, just got a side hustle. I was so pleased for them when they actually got that breakthrough, and the manner of it too. The little touch before he actually scores the goal was absolutely beautiful. Like, a great moment for him.
Yeah, 100%. I feel a bit sorry for Perin because...
Yeah, I had a good game.
He was excellent. Very much takes a Buffon, and then suddenly you're like, well... 100%, and everyone's talking about you, and then going, yeah, yeah, but you deserve to lose. Now, hang on, but I just did that. And I didn't.
He was going to be the hero, right? He was going to be the hero of the night, and then it's now forgotten.
Look, that Bremer shout about him being Juve's most important player is looking better by the week, because his absence continues to look shakier in terms of this Juve backline. But look, first game they've lost this season. Be interested to see how Motta bounces back from that. He got handed a bit of a bum deal by the fact that Douglas Luiz got injured in the warm-up and he had to kind of change shape. They looked a bit better when they went back to 4-3-3, so I don't think we'll be seeing this 4-1-4-1 again anytime soon. Talking of underachieving sides, PSG won, PSV won in the sort of name derby, if you will. Look, I've been really hot on Lucho's PSG and I still expect them to get better, but I am starting to think that my dark horse's shout might just be a season too early for this new post-Mbappe project. It feels like a massive problem that with Gonzalo Ramos out at the moment, they can't find a system that works for them in the same way. And clearly, Lucho is struggling to trust Kolo Muani as his main striker. He started Kangin Lee through the middle again here. Just doesn't seem to rate Kolo Muani. Annoyingly, from Enrique's perspective, Kangin Lee is doing everything he's being asked to do. Tireless running, great facilitation. He opened up numerous chances for Bradley Barcola and Ousmane Dembele outside of him, but neither could finish any of the chances being put in front of them. And Dembele also gave the ball away for PSV's opener. It's starting to cost their team in this competition. Look, Hakimi's still the business, and he scores the equaliser here. PSG think they get themselves a penalty late on. It turns out that not to be the case. That's after Marco Asensio comes on and plays through the middle. Kolo Muani kind of shifted out wide for a little while. It all felt a little bit uncomfortable. But I think maybe the major headache is that Vitinha didn't play and the usually brilliant midfield too easily shrugged off physically in this one. I still think PSG will be all right, but I'm starting to lose faith in my shout that by the end of the season, they'll be right up there. So not a great result from their perspective. Staying in France, Monaco won 5-1 against Werner Zvezda, Red Star Belgrade. Monaco's incredible unbeaten run to open this season continues, right? Big 5-1 win here. It wasn't quite as easy as it looks on paper. The first half, it felt like Monaco really struggled with the physicality of their Serbian opponents. After the break, they seemed to calm down and gain complete technical control of the game, and then they made it count in front of goal. Takumi Minamino's brace will take the headlines, but I really thought that Brill Mbolo was absolutely excellent as well. His goal on the stroke of halftime, just before the break, puts Monaco back up 2-1. And it really set the scene, I think, for them to step on the gas in the second half. Monaco looked really, really good, man. And it's great to see them back to something near their best. Their return to the Champions League has them looking very much at home, and they top the table domestically as well. So keeping an eye on Monaco.
They've had a pretty good start
to the season. So shouts out to them. Girona won 2-0 against Slovan Bratislava. How they needed this. Look, Slovan look out of their depth in this competition. And it took a while for Girona to find their feet. A bit like Bologna. I suppose it's to be expected. Michel lost top scorer Artem Dovbik, midfield linchpin Alex Garcia, winger extraordinaire Savio, right back Jan Couto, and Barcelona loanees Eric Garcia and Pablo Torre, right, who all played massive parts in Girona's success last year. It was never going to be easy, even if they did recruit well. And to be honest, I think they did. And so their early season struggles are understandable. But it did mean that this was nice to revel in. They were dominant from start to finish against Slovan, and they deserved their 2-0 win. Juanpe's free kick was lovely. It took a deflection, does not matter. He's been there for 8 years. He's been there through the promotions. He's been there through the lean times. He deserves all of the flowers and this massive moment, crowning their first ever Champions League win. Well done, Girona. That's basically all I have to say. Just really nice to see. I was really, really delighted for them. And again, watching this in the squares and around Vigo, people were delighted for Girona. And that was quite a nice thing to see as well. And finally, Sturm Graz lost 2-0 to Sporting. Jokeres assist, Jokeres goal, Sporting win. Rinse and repeat for Ruben Amorim as the green machine rolls ever onwards, Dean. Lovely goal from Nuno Sanches for the first one. He does really well to round the defenders and the keeper before he rolls home. Sporting just keep ticking along. They've won 11 of their last 12. They're unbeaten since that weird loss to Porto in the Portuguese Supertaça at the start of the season. Manchester City at the José Alvalade next. It feels like a huge test, obviously, but also with the narrative around it, given that Amorim is currently being linked as a long-term Pep successor, that Hugo Viana has just traded Lisbon for Manchester as sporting director. I've been saying for a long time that Sporting have the capacity to go deep in this competition this year. They have the squad depth, they have the quality, they have a top quality manager, they have a striker that almost all of Europe would want, and they're on an incredible run of form. I can't wait to see them play City.
Yeah, that's going to be amazing, isn't it? It's on fireworks night as well, mate. So that'll be quite fitting, I think. I also want to see how Gyökeres does in a game like that. You know, I'm not going to say it completely defines who he is as a footballer, given everything he's done in the past couple of years. But given that there are a lot of big Champions League clubs weighing up whether he is going to be able to do it at the very, very top level as a leading number nine and a club that looks to win this competition, it'll be interesting to see how he fares. We know that City are a team you can score against, so I do expect Sporting to actually score in that game. I think it'll be a really good one.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Really, really excited. So lots to like about the way that Sporting are playing, and I think that's going to be a really, really good test for them. So very exciting. And there we have it. All 18 Champions League games rounded up for you here on Champions League Takeaway.
Oh, take a deep breath, mate. There's steam coming off your keyboard where you've been putting all that together in the 10 minutes that there had been since the game's actually finished and came to a close. I even had to do a school pickup during the second half of the Liverpool game. So I was walking to the school and back, like watching the second half. It's a bit wild, but this is it. This is the new Champions League as we know it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot going on and obviously loads to look forward to in the new look Europa and Conference Leagues tomorrow night. So lots of football still to get stuck into. But for us, that will be all that's left for me to do. Say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. The truth will be back on Friday where Sam and Doogie are going to be talking about Kai Havertz, a very exciting one, especially given that Arsenal have struggled a little bit in front of goal in recent weeks. So lots to discuss in there. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you very shortly, gang. Take it easy. Peace.